Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the lucky 13th day of April, Anno Domini 2019, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We'll be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes news first.
Friday the 13th falls on a Saturday.
On a Saturday this year, that's
Right. It's coming a little later than usual.
Yeah. Okay. But I do want to, we send out our best wishes to Steve Ray, who's one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest.
Yep.
Hiding among the mesas and
wadis. We're not starting up a GoFundMe.
Yeah, right.
I heard
he has to find his way back on his own. We don't care.
He's wearing a sombrero and an even larger fake mustache on top of his regular mustache.
All right, this week's main news. Yeah. This month's Patch Tuesday sent many Windows users running for cover. Win7 and Win8.1 machines running Sophos antivirus products frequently refuse to boot. The dragnet has since expanded with both Avira and Avast now admitting their products are having problems, and rumors are swirling about many other antivirus manufacturers. You have to ask, who's testing this stuff? Sophos and Avast and Avira have all reported problems with various combinations of those patches. We've also seen anonymous reports that the Windows 7 patch interferes with McAfee virus definition updates. Microsoft now said it has temporarily blocked devices from receiving this update if the Sophos endpoint is installed until a solution is available. Much to their credit, both Sophos and Avast have named employees working on the reports. We've also heard persistent rumors that Microsoft is also blocking the 6 patches on machines with other antivirus products.
Well, that's nice of them.
Avast, Avira.
So Microsoft is looking for those binaries, and then if they're present, saying, we'll hold off on this.
Right. But there's no official confirmation of that, but that's the rumor we keep hearing.
Okay.
But if Microsoft had a solid reputation for reporting the antics of its installers, I'd be skeptical of the rumors. But, of course, Microsoft's reputation is precisely the opposite. We're coming up on 4 days after the bomb dropped, and we really have no idea. There's an additional problem that's starting to rear its ugly head. There are many reports of this month's first cumulative update for Windows 10 version 1809, KB4493509, for those of you playing at home, slowing machines down to the point that they're unusable. Avira has mentioned this problem, too. Right now, with the background decibel level so high, it's hard to know exactly what's causing problems. But anyone running Windows 7, 8.1, Server 2008 R2, 2012, 2012 R2, should be cautious. And Win10 version 1809 cumulative updates are always a crapshoot, as many of you can painfully attest. Why isn't anyone testing this stuff? Good question. But there's no easy answer except for one. You're testing this stuff. Welcome to the Microsoft beta test program. You're it. So we do have a poll of the week up, but as it turns out, one of the problems is there was a security update for WordPress, which, of course, I installed because it's a security update.
Yeah.
But it broke the poll. That's why the poll is broken. And they're working on it. They're working on it. Until they fix it, the poll is
that's okay.
It's not actually missing in action. It's FIA, frozen in action.
Frozen in action. Yeah.
So it's your third party plugin for the poll, or is this a native?
What?
Should we go call Matt Mullenweg and
yes, give
get
him on,
get him on the horn?
Yeah.
No, or is this a third-party plugin?
No, it's a third-party plugin.
Okay, all right.
But the forums are, of course, still working. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under the poll discussion is 13 April 19, Windows updates causing freezes. And you can join three people who have posted in there. And if you want to complain about the... the fact that the poll is broken, you go right ahead, but there's nothing I can do about it since I didn't write the poll. This is why I don't like using other people's software.
Yeah. You have no control over it.
I have
it.
No control over it.
Yeah, it's out of your hands, and it is what it is.
Well, great. When it works, it's great.
Right, exactly, exactly.
When it doesn't, anyway, you have to wait. If you don't like it, you know, you can always go write all your own OS and all your own device drivers. And
well, I've written all my own web stuff, but I didn't for this because it's just big. So, okay, and now I live with
that. It's a trade-off.
It's what I hate. All right, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. In terms of this update causing problems, it's happened every month this year.
Really? Mm-hmm.
With every Windows update, there are problems. And we've said this many times. Yes, there are a gazillion different setups out there for
all the
Windows.
Permutations of the different
configurations
ways things
can be set. Up the wazoo.
Exactly. And so I get it. Microsoft can't test everything. But to not test an antivirus program.
Basic stuff.
Yeah. Their assumption is everybody's using Windows Defender.
Well, ex-contestant.
But the individual vendors themselves should be in the dev program and have pre-release seeds to all the patches before they get released to the public and be able to raise. And perhaps they did. Perhaps they did, you know, file a report and say, right, hey, hold up, this isn't going to fly. And Microsoft said, sorry, we're releasing it anyway.
Yeah, it depends on whose ears it fell upon.
And it depends on the severity of the fix.
Yeah, okay, right? We'll deal with that. They go by the percentages.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like anything else, it's always the percentages. Oh, well, we can live with that.
This could corrupt your data. Yeah, mm-hmm. But otherwise your antivirus might not work. Well, sorry, your data is more important than antivirus, so we're going to prioritize that.
And especially since viruses, for the most part, are on the downward slope. I mean,
right. Well,
it's the spyware and the malware.
The problem is there's viruses that are still out there from the 90s. They just don't go away.
Right.
New ones aren't being made, but those old ones are still there. So you need antivirus as much as you need all that other
stuff. Oh, yeah, but what I'm saying, though, as far as updates.
Right.
Like, you know, the updating, you got to have it. I mean, I'm not saying that you don't have to have the antivirus software, but that for
update. It won't update as often as the other stuff.
And that's okay, folks. Don't worry about it because, like I say, the big thing that you have to worry about is your spyware and malware programs. Those have to be updated weekly, if not a couple times during a week.
Is not unusual. Not too often.
Is not unusual. To see another, you know, they call it some folks call it a nag, but you know what? That they've got to update their software. Yeah, let it update.
Yep.
Because it's keeping you from being exploited.
Right.
And like I say, when I say that the viruses are on the downslope, yes, they are. And you won't see maybe an update for that, but maybe once a month if we're lucky.
Right.
But you still have to have it, like Nick was saying, though, to keep out that old stuff that can still worm its way in there because they try to find different patches or holes that Microsoft never got around, really, because they didn't think it was that big of a concern to really do anything about it.
Right. So if you do have a machine that was trashed by any one of this month's updates, what you have to do is boot into safe mode. And then roll back the updates.
Which
and,
is doable.
And wait. Yep.
Yeah, it's doable.
It's doable. It's a pain in the neck, but it's doable.
Luckily, you know, I've only got the one machine. The new machine that I have has Windows 10 on it. The machine that I have upstairs in my ham shack, I put Windows 7 on it.
That has the same problem. One of the machines that has a problem with the latest update is Windows 7. 7, 8. Everything. But yeah, I know you don't have it connected to anything.
Yes, I do.
I told you, don't tell people about this because then it sounds like we're endorsing continuing to use Windows 7 and we can't answer questions about Windows 7 anymore because Microsoft is taking all the information off the web.
Right. True. I am using it specifically for specific software that doesn't go to the web. I'm using it for my banking and that type of stuff because it doesn't have to connect to the web. You know, my check program and everything else, it's simple.
You don't download your transactions? You enter those manually?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I put everything in myself.
Okay.
Yep. That's why this machine literally is up there, and it doesn't have to connect to the internet. It doesn't have to do anything.
Well, then it doesn't matter what you run at.
So
exactly.
But if you're connecting to the internet, stop using Windows 7.
Oh, right. Yeah. You forget it.
Dave is doing something called air gapping. He's making a giant cylinder of air all the way around the computer, and it's not plugged into anything but the wall for electricity.
Exactly. And
it's an appliance.
It runs literally my banking program. And I've got a couple other graphic design programs that I like using. And again, I don't need the internet for that stuff. If I want, right next to that computer is my Chromebook.
Right.
My Chromebook connects to the internet, and I can do all I want. I don't worry about viruses or anything else. And that everything is fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to worry about, you know, especially the way... I don't trust Microsoft and Windows 10 with my banking program in that. You know, I religiously back up the file, and that's saved off to other places. I've got at least 3 copies of that that I do every other week. So, you know, I'm not that far behind in my banking. But again, I don't trust Windows to do one of the updates, crash my system, and then, like you said, I got to sit there and try to create all that stuff.
Yep.
That's a pain in the butt. So I just don't trust them because they've, you know, they screw up a free lunch.
Yes. This year, certainly, every single update, in fact, since last August, every single update has had a certain number of problems. And this year, particularly, they've had massive numbers of problems with every single update. It's just, you get to a point where you think, I got to look into Linux, or I need to buy a Chromebook, or I'm going to get a Mac. You got to do something,
right?
They're not getting it right, folks.
And one thing I have noticed now on my Windows 10 machine, you know, every time they just did another update, and it just seems to be slowing the machine down, checking stuff and everything else, versus, you know, going on my Chromebook and it just pops up, does it? Every time they're doing these updates, it seems to be taking this brand new machine and slowing it down. I've got over, what is it? I've got 32 gig of memory.
Yeah.
And I figure for that type of machine, that should be flying.
It should be flying.
No, it's got Windows 10 on it, and that's the issue.
Yep. I'll tell you, I had a laptop, like I've said this before, I bought it for class that I ended up not teaching at RIT. And Windows kept slowing down and slowing down and slowing. When it was taking 2 minutes to boot, when it was taking a minute and a half to open Office, I thought, you know what? I'm done. I put Linux on it. It flies. It boots up in 8 seconds. And then I have an SSD on that machine. And it was slow in Windows.
Huh?
Yes.
An SSD?
Yes. And because I put it in an SSD. And
no, I mean,
I boot up in Linux, and it boots up in 8 seconds, and it flies. It literally flies. Well, not literally. Stop using that word.
Mm.
It metaphorically flies.
Yes. Figuratively.
Figuratively flies. And I've only got 8 gig of RAM, but I can give 4 gig of that to a VM, and still flies.
Right.
You know, it's ridiculous. And updates. Somebody's saying to me, yeah, but Linux updates all the time, too. Yes, but you click a button that says okay, and then you just go on and do whatever you were doing. Mm-hmm. It happens in the background, and you only reboot if it's actually updated the kernel.
Mm-hmm.
That's and even then, you don't have to. It's like a Chromebook. You can use it until you're done. When you shut it down, next time you boot it up, it's running the new software. Done.
Mm-hmm.
It's not... And I do, you know, 90% of what I do, I can do on a Chromebook. But there are just a few things that I do.
That's why I've got the other machine, and that's why I keep that separate. I don't have to worry about it. Microsoft can do whatever they want to the downstairs machine and have at it.
Yep.
You mess it up, big deal.
The big difference for me is because on my main machine, I've got one of those Wave keyboards.
Oh, yeah.
I can type for hours without my carpal tunnel bothering me.
Nice.
So much of it has to do with the mechanics of that, as opposed to, am I really using any of the power of Linux? And my desktop has 16 gig. So I run 2 or 3 VMs and
Well, and plus, if anybody ever comes into your house that you don't like, you can use it as a melee weapon because it's completely gigantic.
Or
if there's some type of tsunami, you can use it as a boogie board and make your way out of town.
That's right. And if only I could figure out how to make it a hoverboard, I'd be in good shape. That's exactly right.
Those things are gigantic. They're like an ironing board.
They really are. But I have the desk space, and it's nice. And of course, it makes a perfect place for my 20-pound cat to lie. Yeah.
Well, it's just so luxurious when they can stretch out.
And it gives them that little wave that makes them feel...
It's ergonomic.
Yeah, it's ergonomic.
For more than just
you. Get your hip right in that hollow and you're good.
That's right. That's when they look up at you and just give you that look like, what? I'm laying here.
Look at you. I get his back.
You should probably have a second keyboard just for the cat.
I had one for my daughter.
Yeah.
And I should drag it out for the cats.
There you go.
And just set it on there.
I used to put
a drink by it so they think it's really being used.
That's exactly right. Well, what I did with my daughter was she always wanted, you know, when dad was sitting with her, she's in her high chair and she wants to be with dad. And so I'd bring her into the computer room and she'd keep reaching for the keyboard to play with it. So I gave her an old keyboard. She'd pound on that keys. Who cares? It's an old keyboard to be with. I'd set the TV up in front of her so she could watch Barney or whatever she was watching. And she had that keyboard in front of her. She was working away just like dad.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
It was great.
Oh, one other thing I'm liking, though, like I said, having that Chromebook upstairs, the other apps...
Yeah.
That are, you know, I'm putting on there that, you know, are great now that I can do the different. Oh, yeah, I can do that now.
Because your Chromebook will do the Android apps.
Yep.
And probably the Linux stuff, too.
Yeah. And like I say, I just like the idea that, you know, what was it? I think just a couple days ago. I forget because it's automatic that I open it up and it says, oh, yeah, I need to restart. We did an update. Overnight.
And you just shrug and you do it and you're
back up and
running.
Okay, well, go ahead and do it.
Right. Well, you do the restart and 8 seconds later you're running again. How hard is that?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a 2-minute boot up and it's not slower next time or the crapshoot, you know? You roll the dice and you pray that it actually is going to come up after the reboot.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
You don't have any of that. You don't have any of that. And 99% of what people do. No, what 99% of people do, they can do on a Chromebook.
Sure.
You know, most people don't need more.
Scrolling through social media, to analyzing their pictures that they're taking, doing email, printing whatever is important to you, whatever information, whether that's recipes or whether that's driving directions to somewhere or shopping list or letters or important communications from your family. Or business contacts, you know, it's all doable. And from what I'm hearing, the drivers for things like printers, especially with wireless printers these days,
they're all there.
Oh yeah. Right.
It's completely a non-issue. Whereas previously it used to be kind of a big deal. You got your choice of like four different printers that had good drivers, and lots of the rest that were sort of.
Yeah, the only issue I'm having, because like Nick, I've got a very old home. I've got a wireless printer downstairs, and trying to get my Chromebook to connect to that wireless printer downstairs. It'll connect to my HP because that's on the network.
Right.
Yeah, wired.
But the wireless one, not...
Right, and that has everything to do with the fact that you're in an old home and it's blocking the signal just enough.
Yeah.
No, right. I get that. I have that problem with a couple of things, too. My plan is, and of course she's not listening, my plan is to buy my wife a color laser printer.
Ooh.
With the four separate toner cartridges.
Those are getting cheaper all the time.
Those are getting ridiculously cheap, and my plan is to put that downstairs where she can be, you know, she mostly spends her time downstairs, but she can just get at it. I fully expect I will not be able to connect to it from upstairs,
right?
Simply because of the wireless situation.
Hmm.
And I get that, and I don't have a problem with it because it's going to be her printer.
Now, compared to a USB printer or a network-based printer, wireless printers, in my opinion, are only about 70% connection success rate. And lately it's been better, but I think over my entire technical career, they've been...
Iffy at best.
Iffy, a lot more iffy than a nice copper connection from one end to the other.
Well, like I say, I can, you know, at least print to the HP laser printer.
Yeah.
Oh, update. We're now up to... My area is now up to 54%. We're over the halfway mark.
Okay.
So we
bring me up to speed.
Green light.
Ah, yes.
Okay. Green light is finally in my area. They're taking orders and all that. So
you're going door to door.
We've been the neighborhood group's been going out there trying
to get elbowing the Girl Scouts with the cookies out of the way. Well, and saying, no, let me tell you about
for people.
Let me tell you about green light.
Yeah. My area is huge because it goes from Empire Boulevard over to Norton Street, covers from Culver Road all the way down to the expressway.
Yes.
That's a pretty...
It's a pretty big area.
Freaking big
they
area.
They open the door. I'd like to tell you about the most wonderful thing. And they say, no proselytizing. And they say, no, it's green light. It's fantastic. People, close the door.
The wife has been sending out the words and the neighborhood and everybody else is trying to get the word out there. We're slowly creeping up there to get it up because it's literally across the street.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was the whole reason I started a Nextdoor group for my neighborhood. And, Nextdoor, I'd say signal to noise is not quite as good as I would like, but it was a great place. And every few months, I see somebody else posting, hey, get on this green light thing. Hey, get on this green light thing. And I'm all for it. And what was the news I heard this week where Spectrum is offering special deals? If you live in a neighborhood where green light is an option, you get options for different pricing on your Spectrum.
So my
what
question
do you know?
Competition.
Is, if I, what if, a wonderful thing,
right? So if I my question is, if I were a Spectrum internet customer,
right,
and I didn't have Greenlight in my neighborhood,
and Greenlight was available. Oh wait, no. If Greenlight was not available, Okay, that would be me.
How porky would I be that somebody else can get better pricing than I can get?
Oh, I'm a little.
Yeah.
I mean, I get
same
it
here,
from
right?
a business perspective. I get what they're doing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it only makes me want to pull for green light even more.
Exactly.
It's like,
the problem is they're not helping their case.
Hmm.
Right? Because it porks you off even more.
Yeah, it's all about the retention for them.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Just like Ed did. From Rochester, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Yeah, hi. How's it going? I was just curious. If I get a Chromebook, but I don't want to pay the beloved phone company for a dedicated line, is it possible or even feasible to run the Chromebook through my smartphone's data?
Yes.
Port?
Well, what type of smartphone do you have?
Yeah.
I got a Samsung, and that's an unlimited data plan.
Yes, then yes, absolutely yes.
Tether it.
I know any number of people who do it. You can tether it or create a hotspot, either one. Who's your carrier?
Verizon.
You win. Verizon was given a whole bunch of spectrum by the United States government with the proviso that they allow people to make hotspots in their homes or tether without penalty or without having to pay for it. So, yes, you absolutely win.
You're a lucky man.
How would you set that up? Would you sync everything, and would the Chromebook automatically search and find the mobile data connection?
I know. I have not done it myself, and I admit that entirely.
Typically, you'd set up the hotspot first on the phone, and that converts the cellular network into a Wi-Fi network. And then, when you get the Chromebook, you tell the Chromebook to connect or to search for local Wi-Fi networks until it finds the one that your phone has created. Do I have that right?
Yes, you do. You have exactly that right.
Okay. And and then generally there's a password that's associated that you either create on your phone or that your phone creates. And you go back to your Chromebook and say, I want to connect to this network that my phone made. And you hand it the same password. And then the two talk to each other. And your phone then is a middleman between your Chromebook and the rest of the world.
It's essentially your router.
Yeah.
I was gonna ask that. So you have to give your quote-unquote router a password like you would if you had a regular router in the house, right?
Well, the ones that I've seen, and I haven't got the latest version, but the ones that I've seen don't let you do it without a password.
Yeah. Short answer,
and
yes.
You want a password anyway because then, you know, you don't want some jamoke sitting in your driveway connecting to your network.
Gotcha, gotcha. Let me ask you another stupid question. If I don't, I'm not a gamer or anything like that. Would this eat up a lot of data, or don't I care since I have an unlimited plan?
A, you don't care.
Yeah, short answer, it depends. Long answer, you don't care.
Yeah. I've heard though via the grapevine and some fine print, I can't find it, that supposedly if you go over a certain number of gigs, then they're going to kick you back to the original two gigs.
Well, yes, yes. The fact is that although you are paying for quote unquote unlimited data,
within
Verizon
their
doesn't
limits.
Like you using unlimited data. They don't like you using what you're paying for. So if you go beyond a certain number of gigs, then they will throttle your speed.
Usually it's right. That. Yeah, usually they don't change your plan back to a different
cap. Right. They just throttle your speed.
But we're not lawyers. Do check your agreement and see right. What you agreed to.
But in general, depending on what it is you do, particularly if you're not a gamer, you shouldn't have, and you don't do a lot of streaming, you shouldn't have a problem.
Good, good. That's excellent advice. I think I'll go get me one. Thanks a lot.
There you go. Appreciate have fun.
It. Yeah, it'll be good. And with the right. weird and for weather those, coming up, you can sit at home and break it in.
Right. And for those of you who already have wireless or wired in your homes, if your router is only a wired router, you can still connect a Chromebook. I bought
an adapter.
It was an adapter for a Mac.
Okay.
It went from, it's an old one because it's USB-A.
Yeah, USB-A. Yeah, it's probably
USB-A
10,
to, yeah, 10-100. Mm-hmm. So it's a little slower than my gigabit Ethernet connection.
Right.
And even in my house, I have a gigabit switch in my house.
Right.
But so it's only 100 megabits. So what?
It'll work.
It works.
It's still better than dial-up.
Right. So I tried it. I figured, what the heck? It's sitting around. Let's give it a try and see what happens. Chromebook was like, oh, I don't care. Let's do this. And it just went, whoop, connected, no problem. I turned off the radio, and it still worked.
Nice.
So if you can get a USB, whichever you have,
right.
to... Ethernet jack, tether, little dongle, then you can just connect it up wired. And again, depending on how fast your connector is,
sure. mm-hmm.
you can get whatever speed it gives you. So,
well, it's nice that it knew how to play with that dongle so nicely.
I really thought this isn't going to work. This,
right.
this really is not going to work.
Right, right.
But it's going to be fun to try because I got the thing sitting here.
That's right. And let's do an experiment.
Yeah.
Let's see what we get.
Boom! It was just, oh, look what you have. Let's connect wired now. And it just showed up. Bang. Wired.
It shrugged and said, all right.
Yeah.
here we go.
You want to do it this way? We'll do it this way. I don't care.
Yeah, really.
It was very cool. And that may not have happened, 2 years ago, 4 years
yeah,
ago.
Right.
With a Chromebook. But it certainly is happening now. And it goes back to what we were saying about printers. When Chromebooks first came out, there were a very limited number of printers you could use.
Yeah.
They had to connect to the Google Cloud print system and yada yada yada. Now you just turn it on and say, show me the printers. Boom, there they are. Oh, let's use this one. Okay, boom.
Yeah, next thing you know, paper's coming out.
So not that I use printers anymore, except for this.
Just for the news.
Once a week, I use it for the news.
Yep, just like taking a bath.
Stepping back.
Once a week, whether you need it or
whether
not.
Whether you need it or not.
Stepping back.
Friday night.
That's right.
Stepping back to what we were talking about before, though, it's going to be interesting, though, because the way Gelisano is pushing to get green light in so many areas right now, if I was Spectrum, I'd be a little concerned because, I mean, he is going out full bore in Greece, in the lower part of the city, in Irondequoit, Webster. He's hitting all major areas and offering one heck of a plan that Spectrum is going to have to pony up and start offering it. And like you were saying, too, and I'd be ticked, too, if all of a sudden, because you have it in your area, and they come along and say, tell you what, we'll give you this deal, and they're not offering it to me, I'm going to be a little porked.
Actually, this week, on last Sunday, my DVD, my DVR died.
Okay.
So Monday morning, I called up Sunday night.
Spectrum DVR that you're
Spectrum
renting
DVR,
from
right.
Okay.
My Spectrum DVR, called up Spectrum thinking, you know, is it really dead or is this something they can do from their end?
It's only mostly dead.
It's only mostly dead, right? There's dead? Yeah. Okay, so I called them up, and of course, the lady almost immediately says, no, you're toasted.
Uh-huh.
And she said, we can set up a person to come to your home and fix it. And I said, well, when will that happen? They said, well, it looks like Thursday. I said, you know what? I'll just take it there tomorrow morning, Monday morning.
Right.
Why would I not do that? But while I was on the phone,
okay,
retired man,
quit bragging.
Exactly.
Gee whiz.
I actually had to put on pants on Monday.
Look
that was
you with the
horrible.
Free time.
Horrible.
Oh. Yeah, we get it. You're retired. Okay.
Rub it in. Should have done it 40 years ago. Anyway, so while I was on the phone, she tried to upsell me.
Of course.
Said, oh, I see you don't have our internet package. We can give you this. I said, no. Here's the deal. I have green light. And she actually heard her go.
Alec Baldwin is over her shoulder saying, always be closing, always be closing,
exactly.
Always be closing.
But when I said I have green light, I could hear her go, oh.
you're one of those.
Oh. Mm-hmm. And I said, look, here's the deal. I want my entertainment and my internet connection to be separate. Because if my internet connection goes down, I still have cable.
Right.
And if my cable goes down, I still have my internet connection.
Sure.
And if both of them go down, we probably got bigger problems.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to have any power in the house anyway.
Yeah.
But how many times has your green light gone down?
In 3 years?
Yeah.
What is it? No, 4 years. Now, it's gone down three times. Twice because somebody dug up a cable.
Ah, yes. The North American fiber-seeking backhoe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. They're common in this area.
very common in this area.
And they do strike from time to time.
They were doing something. I don't know if it... One time I know it was the sewers, and another time I don't
sewers.
Know what it was.
Who needs sewers? Come on. We got bandwidth here.
We don't need sewers. So they were digging it up, and bang, there went my connection. And then one time was in the dead of winter when we had the ice storm.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. And each time it was back up within an hour.
Yeah.
Three words for you.
Okay. I know what they are. You can't say them on television.
Yes, I can.
On radio.
Cut the cord.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I need to cut the cord. I know that. But I can do all of that and still, you know, right now, because I have the speed. You know, I was looking at something the other day, and it was talking about a new video conferencing thing.
Right, right.
And it said right there, you've got to have a minimum. This was interesting. It said you have to have a minimum 4 gigabit connection that's persistent.
4 gig? Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
4 gigabit.
Hmm.
Right. But it's got to be persistent.
And what do you have at your house?
One? I've got
1 gig?
Not four, excuse me.
Four megabit. Okay.
I have Enright disease.
Sorry. I'm just trying to clarify.
Thank you.
For everybody who's been staring at the radio in their car for the last 10 seconds, please put your eyes back on the road.
Yeah, right. 4 megabit.
That's why I'm here.
But persistent.
Yes.
Which is the word I've never heard any of them use for that before. So if you've got something that's up to 4 megabits.
An ex-wife can be persistent.
Right, right.
I've had a cough that's been persistent.
Right. But the point is, if you've got something that's up to 4 megabits,
yes,
it may not always be 4 megabits.
Oh, undoubtedly.
Undoubtedly. Yes. So if you unless it is constantly capable of 4 megabits,
right,
they're saying you're going to have trouble. And I really like the way they put that.
It's very honest.
It's very honest.
Yeah.
I really like the way they put
that.
But going back to my original point, though. Spectrum's going to have to do something and do something soon because the whole trend right now is everybody's looking to go around with their laptops, streaming data, movies.
Right.
The Disney is now going to open up a program and they're going to compete with Netflix and all this other stuff.
Yep.
And they're going to, if they don't step up and do something equivalent, they're going to be left behind.
That's true.
They're going to be like the phone company because the phone company, you don't even see them advertising for, you know, phone service or anything else now.
Yes. Oh, right. Yeah. Be sure and subscribe and get your call waiting and, you know, your call forwarding and call return. Yeah.
I mean,
Frontier has a real problem which is they don't have fast internet speeds and nobody wants a home phone anymore. And I understand that's an issue for them. I don't know what they do.
Well, it's just like Kodak and film.
Right.
You know, we've gone to now your cameras in your phone can take better pictures than some of the old Polaroids and everything else that you used to do.
Right. And yeah, I get it. They have an issue, but so does Time Warner. People don't need cable anymore. They, you know, as long as you have a fast internet connection, wherever you get it, you need only that. And then whatever these packages are. Now, I do have a problem with the packages.
Yeah.
You know, $7 a month for this one, and $15 a month for this one, and $30 a month for this one. And on each one of them, there's one or two things I want to see.
Well, but I mean, that was what we were complaining about with cable for decades, though, was right? So you get 40 channels, of which you care about three.
Right.
The same thing we said about CDs, where you buy an album and you've got two songs on it you care about, but you got 12 more that you really don't.
Right.
And, well, like I
and
say,
the CD was $18 in 1994.
Right. Well, I'm using Sling, and I've been using Sling now for 3 years. Because I cut the cord. And again, you know, I preached this a while back. Is, you know, you got to sit there and do your homework. And you can't do it just in a day. You got to think over long term of the programs that you watch versus the spring versus the fall and throughout the whole year.
Sure.
And see, write those down and then see what package offers those.
Right.
For me, it was Sling. What cable companies were offering and what I watched. I made a whole list, and it took me a good 9 months to make my list, because I'd be saying, oh, wait a minute, this one's coming on, you know, when the fall's, yeah, I forgot about that one. And I was in no hurry, I made my list, and then I got everything that I was getting with the cable for a third of the price.
Yep.
Right.
And my eyes were opened when my DVR died, because I had made a list of all the programs that I record.
Right.
And when my new one came, well, the first one I went and got Monday morning didn't work.
What?
Oh, great.
Did not work. Would not.
How happy were you that you get to go back?
HDMI would not connect. And so I pulled the HDMI cable out of the DVR box and plugged it into my Chromebook, and it worked great. So I knew it wasn't the cable, and I knew it wasn't the television.
Okay.
I knew it was the DVR.
Yep.
So I went back and got another one, and they were very nice to me. They gave me a whole new clicker.
Oh, remote?
Gave a new clicker. And they gave me a new HDMI cable. I think they just felt bad that they'd see me twice in an hour.
Yikes.
Well, make you coming back in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but what opened my eyes was when I set the thing back up, of course, I had none of the stuff, none of my programs programmed in.
Oh,
so,
yeah,
sure.
So luckily, I'm not as dumb as I used to be, and I had made a list of all the programs that I recorded.
Uh-huh.
So I went to put them back in, and I kept thinking, I don't even watch that anymore.
Right.
Yeah, I don't even watch that anymore.
I remember back in the TiVo days of having a wish list of shows that, hey, if you ever see a show that has so-and-so actor in it, record it. And, you know, you leave that in there for months because some actor would get hot and be in lots of stuff, and then you wouldn't hear from them for years, and then you go back and look at this list, and it's like, oh, why did I have her in there? Why did I have him in there?
Yep.
Why did I have this director in there? And like, oh, yeah, well, we can clean that out. So, it's really interesting. But I really think we're in this, be careful what you wish for. It's sort of like we got that monkey paw, and we made our wish, and now we've got a very decentralized universe of all sorts of different options at different prices, and suddenly it's, well, I've got YouTube TV at this price, and I've got Sling at this price, and I've got this other product at this other price. And the cable company themselves has a deal where you pick certain channels, certain selections of channels, and then you fire up an app on your whatever your set-top box is, whoever makes it, and then you watch from those channels, and that's a different price per month. And suddenly we have all this choice, but we also have this responsibility to try and
well, that's right. They moved the responsibility onto you, and that's fine, too. I will say that in terms of this new Disney thing, it's $7 a month right now. I'm sure that's going to go up.
So was Netflix, right? I mean, Netflix.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's going to go up. Netflix just raised their prices.
Yep.
And I'm sure Disney will raise their prices. Right now, $7 a month. But, you know, there's two things. If you want to see any of the Marvel stuff, you're going to have to get this.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got kids, you dang well better get this.
Sure.
Because the only way you're going to see Frozen is on this.
Hmm.
You know, as soon as the contracts they've got with other companies run out,
won't be renewed.
They're not going to renew them.
So you think this will be the end of that Disney Vault thing where they...
They've already said it's the end of the Disney Vault.
They're getting rid of that?
They're done with that.
Yeah. Okay. That approach is...
That was a year or so ago.
Right. You know, I don't think... They probably haven't sold a DVD in a year.
Mm. Amazing.
Or 10. Yeah. But because everybody streams everything now.
Right.
And so if I can... If my daughter were still, you know, 6, 7 years old, and I could for $7 a month, let her watch Frozen 60 times a day... Cheap at half the price. Let's go.
Right.
Yes. You know, I do get that. All right, to the phones. We got a couple minutes to talk to Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Yeah, you were talking about losing your DVR, and you had to try to reprogram everything back in there.
Yeah.
One thing they need to do, and, you know, I know Comcast isn't any better than anybody else, but at least with them, as soon as you plug the darn thing in, it starts to load... It's connected to your account, and it starts to load your recordings, not your actual recordings, but your recordings, too. Everything's on the cloud.
Yeah.
And it brings it back in. It brings in your programmed shows that you have on, you know, timed, you know, your time shift, and it brings in your recordings again. You don't lose anything.
Yep. Well, and to be fair, when I talked to the lady at Spectrum, and she was lovely. The employees at Spectrum are amazingly nice people, every one of them.
They take good care of me, too.
Yeah, she did say that that's something they're working on, but it isn't available yet.
I've been hearing that for 4 years from the techs that come to the house.
Yeah. But hopefully they'll actually get somebody who knows how to program soon, and we'll be able to offer that. But in the meantime, let me say to everybody out there, if you're on Spectrum, write down the list of all the things you record. What they are, when they are, and what channel they're on.
If you have the app on your phone, you can go in and you can see your recordings. You can screenshot.
That's true. That's very true. Good thought.
Which is a lot easier.
Good thought.
Yeah. Another thing. Last night, trying to watch TV, all the channels are breaking up and freezing. And I said, "Geez, let me turn on the Roku and stream it from the app." The app was doing the same thing.
Oh, how interesting. So it was at their end.
I guess.
Oh, how very interesting.
Yep. So food for thought.
Nice. Thanks, Mark.
Yep. Have a good one.
You too. Right, you thanks, too. Yep. Oh, that's interesting. So I get that as well. And they always tell me that they start out with there's no problem in your area. So you're an idiot for thinking there is.
That's their opening bid, right?
Yeah. You're an idiot for thinking there is. And then they go to, we're not seeing a problem at our end. And then they go to, reboot your box. And then they go to...
Huh, that's weird.
That's weird. and wait a while and it'll go away. But if it's happening with the Roku app for Spectrum, then clearly the problem is at their end on their servers from which they are serving that video. Yeah, you know, there's no mystery. At the other end of your cable box is a computer with movies and TV shows on a hard drive. Unless it's a live presentation that is beaming from somewhere else.
Right.
But it also, there's if it's beaming, then it might just be that there's a storm between you and them. I mean, we're still, it's still radio. If there's a big storm, you've got a problem. They talk a lot about how, well, if it's Dish and there's a snowstorm, well... It is a dish. Even Time Warner, even Spectrum is a dish. Have you seen the dishes at Spectrum on Mount Hope?
Yeah.
It's still a dish.
It's still there.
So, yeah.
It just doesn't collect quite as much snow on it as all those ones that people's houses tend to.
Right.
Got to spray it with the Pam and hope everything slides off.
There's some intern out there with a broom and
a giant shovel
day.
Like those people that rake the snow off their roof.
Yeah, exactly. They give that to interns.
Well, they've got a spray for that.
They do?
Yeah. I bought a spray, and I've used it for a couple of years
now. Like Rain-X?
Basically, it's for the snow blowers.
Okay.
And what you do is you, in the spring, and then again in fall, I put a couple coats on it, but you spray the chute in that, and it makes it so the snow doesn't clog when it gets wet and heavy in that chute.
Nice.
So when it's throwing it out.
Great.
Very nice.
I've been using that for a few years now.
I'm sure there's...
And they say use it on things like that you don't want snow to stick on.
Yeah. Sure. Cool.
Because it'll make it slide, sort of like a Rain-X.
Yeah. I need it on my windshield.
Yeah. Well, now they put Rain-X in the windshield wiper solution.
Yeah, that's what
you
I
get
do.
The orange.
Right.
The orange stuff, yeah.
It works really nice, and it's not that much more expensive. And you know what else? If you buy a bunch of it, like let's say you go to the auto parts store and you need a certain amount of dollars to get the coupon or to get the discount, you pad your order with a few gallons of that. You put it on the shelf in the garage and forget about it, and you use it when you need it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you stick a nice red bow on it and put it under the Christmas tree and give it to your newly driving child.
There you go.
Or somebody who just bought their car or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
A gift that keeps giving.
You got it in the back pocket.
Yep. My mechanic, I love my mechanic. For a while, a new guy, every time he brought the car in, he was topping off the coolant and then, you know, charging you and leaving the rest of it in your trunk.
Oh.
So I've got about three.
So you're good on coolant then?
I got plenty of coolant.
I'm set for coolant.
Not coolant, the spritzer stuff.
Oh, the
windshield spritzer wiper stuff. Windshield wiper fluid.
Well, that's nice.
It was nice, but unnecessary. I finally said, do not top off the spritzer.
Yes. We're good.
We're good.
Thank you.
I've got enough spritzer to last me the next year.
Right.
And now, of course, this morning I ran out of spritzer.
Oh, no.
I'll fill it when I get home. I've got enough sitting around.
You might be able to find a bottle.
I might be able to.
You've got the last, 3 inches off the last 12 bottles?
Exactly how that works.
Might need to consolidate a bit.
Oh.
What's that?
What is that music? That music tells me that we're done for the first hour. But don't go away. We're going to come back with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. In fact, we're going to come back with Dave Enright, with the great Dennis Worster, and with me, Nick Francesco. So I don't know why you would go anywhere except for a quick bio break. It's going to be a couple of minutes. We'll be back with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. It's Soundbites on member supported, and grateful to you that we are, Jazz 90.1. We'll see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
This is WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites.
Yeah.
And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Terry did from Rochester, New York.
Hello.
Hi, Terry. What's up?
I just bought a new laptop, and I like it very much, but I wanted to review, if you would, how to condition the battery so that it'll last the longest I can possibly make it.
Okay. Which laptop did you buy?
It's a Lenovo E95.
Okay. Oh, nice machine.
It sure is.
So the good news is you've got a brand new battery. Now is the time to condition it.
That's right.
To start conditioning it. And it has a lithium ion battery, and there's a bunch of different ways you can deal with that. The short answer is never top it off.
Okay.
And be aware of temperature.
Okay.
That's important. And if you're going to store it long term. Have it at about 50%.
And then every once in a while, maybe two times a year, drain the battery completely and load it back up again. Do that two or three times.
Two or three times a year.
Yeah. Two or three times, and do that two or three times a year.
Okay.
And what that will do, the problem with batteries is they get used to being, it's an odd way to put this, they have memory.
Yeah.
So if you're constantly running it on, let's say you let it drain to 80%.
Uh-huh.
And then you top it off and drain it to 80% and top it off. You do that over and over and over again. Eventually, it's going to think 80% is as far as it can go.
Oh, I get it.
So every once in a while, drain it right down. In fact, it doesn't hurt. What really hurts is topping it off.
Okay.
Letting it hit 100%. So if you were to drain it down and then top it off to 90 or 95% and then do it again and do it, you know, and run it that way every day, you actually get a longer battery life.
Okay.
Than if you let it top off. Most of the new laptops actually have circuitry to prevent that from happening, but I'm old fashioned and I don't trust it.
You sound like me.
Yeah.
Right.
But the reality is, you know, the battery's going to last about 5 years and then you're going to have to do something anyway.
Well, I'll be lucky if the computer lasts 5 years.
Well, anymore.
Don't go forever. All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck. Have fun with your new laptop.
Thank you. I sure am.
Good.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's important. I'm the worst at this. I am the worst at this. I use this laptop plugged in, my Chromebook plugged in most of the time, and I shouldn't.
Right.
Save here.
I shouldn't, and that's not helping the battery at all. But if you're really worried about battery life, that's the thing. That's the way to kill a battery is to just leave it plugged in.
Oh, yeah.
All the time, and eventually, I guess, and I realize I'm anthropomorphizing it, but it gets used to being plugged in, and the battery itself doesn't last quite as long.
Yeah, definitely in the wintertime, don't keep it in the trunk of your car, and don't. Don't keep it in extreme heat either. The batteries really like to be about the same temperature that you do,
right?
In general,
right. And as I said, if you're going to store it for an extended period of time, set the battery to about 50%. This is true of everything. It's true of your phone and your laptop and your tablet and
Apple,
everything with a battery in it.
Yeah, anything with your wearable watches, all that.
All that stuff.
Anything with a rechargeable battery.
Yep. Yep. And in fact, rechargeable batteries themselves, you know, the little AA rechargeable batteries,
yeah, sure.
same thing. It's topping them off that does them damage.
Right.
So if you can stop at about 90, 95%, you're pretty good. Now there's the other end of that, of course, is that then they get used to being at 95% and they think that's 100%. So
that's
once
true.
In a while, you want to top it all the way off.
Right. But you know, you also have to remember that, the batteries in general are a consumable item. They're not going to last forever.
Right.
And they have to think about the overall lifespan of the device that you have it in. So if you've got a laptop, let's say you're able to stretch it out, you might be able to keep it 5 or 6 years before you decide that you want something else. And your goal is just to have that battery last for 5 or 6 years.
Right.
And I'd say modern laptops with their batteries can do that pretty well without and still retain a vastly significant portion of their battery life.
Right, because most of them have the circuitry that makes it
help.
Doable.
Right. And the other thing is computers in general are not the high power devices they used to be. You know, they're running on a relatively dozens of watts, not hundreds.
That's right.
So they're able to make use of battery power far more efficiently than they used to. So you don't have to go through that charge-discharge cycle quite as often as you used to.
Right.
It used to be you'd charge up your laptop twice a day, and now you're able to get definitely a full day. And with a Chromebook or something, you might be able to get multiple days of life,
right,
depending upon how much battery is in it.
Right, exactly right. TLP. I just put TLP on my laptop. It's a Linux Advanced Power Management.
Okay.
And I'm shocked at how much better my system runs with it. It's pretty cool. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Dennis. What's up?
Hi, guys. I've been listening to you for years and years and years, and I am a member, but I'm confused. Yay. Because I remember the NiCads you were supposed to drain
right.
so often completely and then recharge them. I could have swore the last thing I read that the lithium ions, it's bad to drain them because then you're using up the certain number of cycles that you have for the life
you
of
don't,
the
you don't want to hit zero and you don't want to hit 100%. That's why I'm saying, you know, 95 to 10 to 95 to 10, you actually get more life out of the battery that way.
So if you're going down to, like I forget, sometimes I forget to charge. I go down to 80%, 50%, charge it all the way back up. Sometimes it's like 90% and I top it off to 100%. And that's even with the lithium ions, that's no good.
Yeah,
doing it repeatedly
is they only have a certain number of recharge cycles, but hitting that again, it depends on how new your device is. Most of the newer computers have circuitry in the charger that prevents, well, that mitigates this, makes it less of a problem. But it topping it off can damage the battery more than just charging and discharging. Letting it go all the way to zero can damage the battery more than charging and discharging. So that's why I say a couple of times a year, do a 100% to zero cycle. But the rest of the time, be somewhere in the middle.
Okay. Do we have time for one other? I know the questions are quick.
For a member like you, we have all the time.
Exactly.
Okay. My significant other uses Wi-Fi from our Spectrum router, and I use Wi-Fi from my phone. And yesterday, I happened to sit down at her laptop, and there was a thing that came up that says, this computer has the same IP address as another computer on your network. I've never, in all the years that I've been doing computer stuff and building computers, I've never seen something like that come up. Does it?
Yep, I've seen it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happens. Yeah. How many devices does she have on her network?
Well, total in the house, we only have 3 devices on the network.
Okay.
All right, so does she have a password on her router?
Well, but again, we're using the Spectrum all-in-one router with Wi-Fi, with, you know, LAN. And the whole, so she has a password to get into Windows, but other than that.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the deal. What you want to do is take each of the devices, and in each of them you can look at the Wi-Fi information. You know, on your phone you click the Wi-Fi button. On Windows you right-click on the Wi-Fi icon at the bottom, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things that you can see is the IP address. Typically 192.168.1. That's something.
Okay.
In general, in reality, every device needs to have a different number. That last number has to be different for everybody. If two of them have the same number, then
not going to work.
It's not going to work. The network gets confused, doesn't know who to send the data to.
It's like if your neighbor decided to be a real jerk and put the house number on his house, and he just decided to take your house number and put that on his house too. And then the mail truck comes by and wants to deliver the mail to, you know, whatever your address is. He's not going to know which mailbox to put the mail in.
Right.
Same idea.
Right. So it can happen, and way it sometimes happens is every device that you connect to Wi-Fi has what's called a lease.
Mm-hmm.
And that lease means that you get that IP address for a certain amount of time.
Usually 24 hours or so.
Usually. If you turn your machine off, it's supposed to release that lease. Once in a while, particularly under Windows, that doesn't always happen. So when you boot up again, it goes and says, I've already got this lease.
Yeah, I've got a number. I'll just use this.
But the router says, no, I gave that number to somebody else.
Right. And the somebody else pops up and says, hey, wait a minute. Somebody's trying to also be me out on the network with my number.
Right.
And that's the message you're seeing.
So generally speaking, it's not really a problem. What sometimes happens is people can, instead of using a dynamic address that's given to them by the router, they can set a static address that they always use.
Mm-hmm.
And if they set one that you use without telling the router that they had done that, then you can get a problem like you're having. But okay. it is rare, and it is generally not really a problem. If you just reboot your machine, you should get a different IP address.
Yeah, that's what I ended up doing.
I shut the machine down and let it reboot, and then I didn't, and that thing disappeared.
Yep, good. and that's just, you know, sometimes the system gets confused.
Okay,
not a big deal.
Yeah, not a big deal.
Thank you.
Dennis. Thanks.
Yep. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, anything we can fix with a reboot, that's a good day.
That's a good day. Doesn't happen often enough, but yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I discovered is that I have a couple of old tablets.
Okay.
And they are a little wonky on my Wi-Fi.
Okay.
I gave them static IP addresses.
And then they're
and
happy?
Told the router.
Yeah.
These are reserved addresses for these devices.
Yes, please don't hand out these addresses to anybody else, if you don't mind.
Right, and so it works fine. Now they all work fine. Because they're not
querying.
I don't know if the problem is that they don't, that this problem that maybe Dennis is having, that it doesn't release the IP correctly internally. It still thinks it has that old IP or whatever. I don't know what the problem is. But whatever it is, it's gone when I made of static devices.
Right. Well, in terms of troubleshooting, that's one of the things to do, is to try and reduce the variability.
Right.
And setting that to static can certainly help.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Ogden. Hiya, Dave. What's up?
Yes, hello. Dave. I've got an issue, and you have to promise not to laugh at me.
Oh, no promises, Dennis.
That's okay. We'll let the other, listeners.
The question I'm going to come around to is about setting up a virtual machine. I've heard you mention VM a couple of times.
Sure.
Way back many years ago, I wrote a Visual Basic 6 application.
Ah, I remember it fondly.
Sure.
Yes, and it has refused to die.
Okay.
Yeah.
People still use it, and I need to tweak it.
Yes, be careful what you do.
Right now, I've got Visual Basic 6 installed on a approximately 15-year-old desktop.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. It still works just fine, and I've got a disk clone, hard disk clone, just in case. But I'm nervous that... if this machine dies, what am I going to do about finding Windows XP? So my idea was to set up a virtual machine, put the Windows XP from this machine onto it, and then at least have the theoretical capability going forward of occasionally tweaking this old VB6 app that refuses to die.
Right. Yes, you can do that. So the big questions become, how much RAM do you have in your current main machine?
Yeah, tell us more about your XP box.
About the XP box?
No, about hold on, Dave.
My mistake.
What machine do you intend to put the VM on?
Maybe not purchased yet. That depends on what you tell me. I've got a Lenovo laptop. It's in the T series. And I'd have to give you the exact number, but I probably only have 4 gigs of memory.
Yeah, that's not for Windows.
You definitely need more. VMs, in general, you need all the horsepower and all the memory and all the storage that it takes to run your main computer. But then you're going to also need all of those things that it takes to run your pretend computer as well.
You want at least 8 gigs of RAM, at least.
And that's doable these days. That's not an expensive thing.
Right. 16 gig is certainly better. You can tend to run multiple VMs that way. I'm quickly scrolling through my news feed because I saw...
While you're doing that, I'll just, for the listening audience, the industry term for this is called a P-to-V transition, a physical-to-virtual transition. If you've got a physical machine... Say again?
Shouldn't that be F to V? Physical? Sorry, go ahead.
Gee whiz. Sorry. Come on, Nick. Help me out, man. I come in here trying to sit in,
I know.
Anyway, so the P to V transition, you're going to take a physical machine, you're going to reincarnate it as a file that lives on a disk, and when your VM tools, whether that's a company named VMware that makes a product that will do this, or some other tools. On the Mac, we have another company, Parallels, that can help with this. We've been doing this on the Mac for a number of years because there are some pieces of software that just only run on Windows, and we want to use those. So a P to V transition is what's about to happen. And most of the VMware or virtual machine vendors have a tool that will allow you to take a snapshot or a clone, and it sounds like you had one of those, and then reinflate that as a file elsewhere and turn that into a pretend machine somewhere else. And that allows you to run older pieces of software on a more modern piece of equipment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly what I need to do. Can you tell me, does a Cronus True Image make an image that I could then reinstall on a physically different machine as a within a virtual image partition, let me say?
Short answer, maybe. It depends entirely upon which virtual computing vendor you choose to work with. And I will say that the first choice that those vendors are going to have is for you to use their own tools. So you would get a piece of software and install it on this XP box, and it would work on making a image file that you would then move over to your what we call your host machine, and then that host machine would use that file to create a pretend computer.
Yeah, somebody typed in VirtualBox.
Yeah, I see. Now, without advertising anybody in particular, are there local shops that can set up a virtual machine for you if you provide them with the hardware and the source?
Quite likely. I would suspect that any of the...
You'd have to call around.
Local... I would call around if I were to make sure they can do that. It's not terribly difficult to do. You can actually create a virtual... I do know that a Cronus True Image will create a bootable VHD, virtual hard disk.
Ah, okay.
And basically what you do is you install something along the lines of a VirtualBox, as you would any other software. And then when you boot it up, you can create a new virtual machine, give it however much RAM you want to give it, however many processors you want to give it, however much disk space you want to give it, and then point it at a bootable image, which again you could have made with a Cronus or you know, you've downloaded a version of Linux that's a bootable ISO,
disk image.
CD-ROM image, and then bang, you're on your way. And you can have as many as you can fit in your machine, and in fact, you can have hundreds as long as you don't run them all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so they're just taking up disk space.
The software to create the virtual machine, is this free stuff that is open source that's downloadable, or
yes,
would you recommend a commercial package of some sort?
I personally use VirtualBox for everything.
If it's going to be the kind of thing that you yourself are going to be in charge of running and supporting, then the free stuff could be great. If it's something later on that you're going to hand off to someone else and say, look, now it's your job to support this, here's the VM for it, then going with a commercial tool that might be more popular or better supported by a vendor, or if you're going to hand it off to a company and their IT department and say, look, here's this tool that so-and-so in this department over here has been using for the last 3 decades or 2 decades, then they might want it to be in something a bit more supported, or something that they have in their own environment already.
Right, and we're approaching 3 decades on this particular application, so okay. It shows its age. I'd be embarrassed to turn it over to somebody else. Okay, well, that answers my question. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
A virtual machine is a very cool thing to have if you have enough RAM and enough processors.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, for example, my machine at home is 16 gig, 8 cores.
Okay.
4 processors, 8 cores. So I can set up a 4 or 8 gig machine, virtual machine, with 2 or 4 cores.
Right.
And have a very powerful machine inside my normal machine.
Right.
And if I want to keep that running, maybe I only give it 2 cores and 4 gig or whatever, you know, whatever. But the point is you can make that machine permanent. In fact, when you buy a new machine, one of the things you can do instead of running an operating system and then a virtual box inside it, you can install a hypervisor.
Yeah.
At the base level instead of an operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And all a hypervisor does is run virtual machines.
Yes. This is what we do with our server infrastructure where I work.
Right. And that's what we used to do. So if you run a hypervisor, if you install a hypervisor as the base operating system, and I put that in quotes, then you can say, all right, I want an instance of Windows. I want an instance of Linux. I want an instance of Windows 7.
And if you run your hypervisor on old Mac hardware, you can spin up multiple Mac machines as well.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So, it's fantastic when we need to do testing.
Right.
And we need to spin up a machine that behaves the same way every single time.
That's exactly right.
It's very helpful.
So it's particularly useful for testing. A lot of people I know who are virus tester, checker type people run that stuff in virtual machines.
Yeah, because it's its own little sandbox, and if it all goes crazy and gets infected, it doesn't spill out into
just shut it down, wipe it out. And one of the things you can do with virtual machines is make
like the Matrix
snapshots.
Yeah,
and then just load up that snapshot. It's like it was never touched.
That's right. It's like a time machine.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Still.
Unbelievable, isn't it? Let me read.
What's in the news?
Let's read some more news.
Okay.
Here we go. Most of the time when you talk to an Amazon Echo device, only Amazon's voice recognition software is listening. But sometimes a copy of the audio is sent to a human reviewer.
That's most of the time, you said.
Yeah. It's sent to a human. I said something rude.
Uh-oh.
To my Amazon Echo, my Alaska.
Yes.
Device.
That's what she gets called it. Yeah.
Last night after I wrote this. But sometimes a copy of the audio is sent to a human reviewer at one of several Amazon offices around the world.
Okay.
The human listens to the audio clip, transcribes it, and adds notations to help Amazon's algorithms get better. We take the security and privacy of our customers' personal information seriously, an Amazon spokesrobot said. We only annotate an extremely small sample of Alexa voice recordings in order to improve the customer experience.
Yeah.
Bloomberg, who broke this story, says Amazon has employees listen to audio clips in offices in Boston, Costa Rica, India, and Romania. Romania. Employees interpret as many as 1,000 audio clips in a 9-hour shift. It's not hard to see why Amazon would want to have some audio. Now, that sounds like a lot, but in fact, compared to the number of people who have Alaska devices.
There you go.
It's actually a very small, they really are a very small number.
Well, and you know what's the good news is, you know who's not on that list?
Who?
China, Russia,
China,
Iran.
Romania, that we're aware of, is on the list, right?
They didn't tell us those names, yes.
It's not hard to see why Amazon would want to have some audio clips reviewed by human beings. There's probably no substitute for having a human being listen to clips and verify that the software is interpreting them correctly. But Amazon could have been more explicit about the role of human reviewers. We use your request to Alexa to train our speech recognition and natural language understanding systems, Amazon said in its frequently asked questions page for Alaska, without mentioning the human element. Amazon told Bloomberg that it has strict privacy safeguards in place to prevent misuse of the system. Employees do not have direct access to information that can identify the person or account as part of this workflow, the spokesrobot said. All information is treated with high confidentiality, and we use multi-factor authentication to restrict access, service encryption, and audits for our control environment to protect it. Employees occasionally hear unexpected or extreme audio, Bloomberg reports. In one instance, two workers heard what sounded like a possible sexual assault, but were told that it would be inappropriate to intervene. Employees, there's the downside of that. Employees can discuss what they hear with other employees in an internal chat service, and they can share clips they have trouble interpreting.
Yeah, right.
Although the report
like,
also...
listen to this.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
I'm having trouble interpreting this this person.
Yes.
Yeah. Though the report also mentions files being shared simply because they are amusing.
Ta-da. Thank you.
Bloomberg says that Apple's Siri also has human helpers.
The company they do it too.
They do it too. Yeah.
Come on, guys.
It's the whataboutism.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, we're seeing it everywhere these days. The company points to an Apple privacy white paper that describes how Apple uses audio captured from customers. What about Google's virtual assistant?
Amazon.
Some reviewers have access to some audio snippets from its assistant to help train and improve the product, Bloomberg reports. But it's not associated with any personally identifiable information, and the audio is distorted. The company says, so do you still trust your phone or smart speaker? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, it's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415.
It's all fun and games till the cops show up.
Yeah. This morning, you should try this. I was talking to my Google Home device.
Yes.
As I was getting ready for work, and I was brushing my teeth in the bathroom.
You said, ahoy, Google.
I said, ahoy, Google. I said, how do I look?
Oh, boy.
And it gave me...
Mirror.
I just was amused.
It was speechless?
And I won't tell you what the response was.
Oh, come on.
But it was appropriate and amusing, and I liked it. And I said, thank you. And it said, happy to help.
Wow.
One of the things that the Google Assistant does is you can turn on. It's not
by default.
Automatic. You can turn on, I think they call it extended listening along that line. So it actually listens for a response from you after it gives its response to you.
Right, right. And a lot of times that's for what we call chained requests.
Right.
Tell me the weather for tomorrow in Tulsa, and it tells you the weather. And then you say, okay.
How about in China or
yes,
somewhere?
Right. How about in Indianapolis?
Right.
And then it knows that the context is the user is requesting information about the weather and has now supplied a different variable for me to query
right.
on.
Right. That's exactly right. And the example they often give is when was George Washington president? Who was his wife?
Right.
And so it knows that he refers back to George Washington in the previous
yes.
statement.
There's a context to the conversation
right.
that needs to be preserved.
Right.
So you can enable this extended listening to be able to do that. You were saying.
And I had done that. And the reason I did it is because I'm always saying thank you to it.
What
and,
a jerk.
And it just sits there. Now it actually says you're welcome or no problem or
yes.
glad to help or whatever it happens to be,
Donata.
Which amuses me.
Yeah. It's fun, you know, and it's good. That way you can, if you got little kids in the house, you can teach them to say thank you to the person in the cylinder there.
That's exactly right. Oh, I see you weren't polite.
Demerits.
Demerits.
Demerits. Mm-hmm. Your Wi-Fi speed has been reduced.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned something. My daughter, who is... what year is this? 17, she's 20, no, 19, 27 years old.
Okay.
27 years old, I just discovered, she just admitted to me that we used to give her time out by making her go sit on the steps.
Sure.
Unfortunately, we made her go sit on the steps right in front of the hallway mirror. She never thought of it as punishment. Son of a pup on a stick.
Oh, boy.
Doggone it.
Did you say she had a career in dramatics? Or
yeah.
On the stage?
Yeah. In general, you don't want to sit 6-year-old in front of a mirror and tell her it's punishment.
Oh, okay. I get it now. Sorry.
Right? She's just having fun. She's
entertaining herself.
Sticking out her tongue.
She's got to do the time. She's making her passes. You know, she sees fat.
That's right.
Raising her eyebrows and doing all sorts
of
stuff.
Doing whatever she's going to do.
Oh, man.
Unbelievable.
Well, it's good that she wasn't sitting there with a sense of shame and look at yourself in the mirror for what you've done. And
right.
It's a good thing it didn't go that way. You know, it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah. Well, that's why I had to get. I mean, I couldn't help it. Nick was trying to do a story one time, and he's just a few, maybe 2 months ago.
Okay.
He's going on and on.
Uh huh.
And he's surprised because his daughter is asking about all this technology.
Yeah.
And yeah. I couldn't laugh. And Nick goes, what do you think is so funny up there? I go, no, you're not listening to yourself. It's you. You created this monster.
I created that monster. I did.
Right.
And she's just a spitting image
of the way
she's got to do everything.
Hello, tree, meet apple.
Yeah, exactly. The other one, Amazon, had Echo Dots on sale for like $30.
Yeah, yeah.
So I bought one for Elaine, I bought one for my daughter, I bought one for me.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. Under $100 for three of these things.
Right.
So she set it up, she loves it, blah, 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 blah. And I helped her set it up long distance. And then just a month ago, she won Google Home Mini.
Okay.
So she's got that in her bedroom.
Okay.
And the Alexa, excuse me, the Alaska device.
Yes.
Out in her living room, and so I had to help her set that up.
Okay.
All right, we got a question that was typed in.
Ooh, communique.
Yes.
Fan mail from some flounder?
Mm-hmm. I'm a newbie to Linux and need a bootable copy of Ubuntu.
Okay.
Any help you can give is greatly appreciated. Greg is a member.
All right.
All right, Greg. You can't. Here's excuse me, I'm apparently... It's allergy season.
All right. What's the good news?
The good news is you can download it for free over the internet.
Ah. What's the bad news?
The bad news is you then have to make it bootable on something.
Right.
Whether it's a CD or a
flash drive.
Whatever. you can download a bootable image directly from Ubuntu.
You can go over to their website.
It used to be getubuntu.com, but I don't think it is anymore.
I imagine Ubuntu as an organization would want to make this process as easy as possible because they would really prefer as many machines as possible on the planet to be running Ubuntu.
Right.
So as Nick carefully types and scrolls.
Ubuntu.com.
Okay.
You can, right across the top, one of the choices is download.
Uh-huh, I see.
And you can download either the desktop...
That's probably
the
one you
server.
Want. Yeah.
The current version is 1810. Their year month. So
okay.
there's 1904 is
2019 April.
Right, is still in beta.
Well, yes.
For another few
it's
weeks.
Fresh, yeah.
But 1810 is available, but 1804 a year ago, 1804 LTS.
Long-term service?
Long-term system, long-term, And the basic idea behind that is the long-term versions are more stable.
Right.
The not LTS versions have slightly newer software, more cutting edge. That means more problems.
Sure.
So you might be a version back on something.
And that's okay.
And that's okay for
90%. There's nothing wrong with that.
But at any rate, if you hit the, you can download it pretty easily. It talks, if you scroll down a little farther, it talks about how to burn a DVD or create a bootable USB stick.
There we go. Winner. That's the one.
On Ubuntu, Mac OS, or Windows.
Beautiful.
And then there's a set of installation guides underneath it. So Ubuntu.com.
Click the download button.
The download button and
desktop.
Right.
and download the desktop version and scroll down to tutorials, and it tells you how to burn create a bootable USB stick.
Okay.
Or a bootable DVD.
How big of a USB stick does it say you need? I wonder. Is it 8 gig?
An 8 gig would be enough.
Okay.
If you're going to actually run it from the USB stick, then you probably want 16 gig.
Okay.
Because then you have space on the drive itself to save files or do whatever you want to do.
Well, but we had a caller last week. Had two USB sticks.
Right. Okay.
One he was using as the bootable, and then the other one was that he was saving the data to.
Right.
Well, and that's nice. You can do that because you can go and then visit anybody's house or take a random machine and fire up the OS that's on one stick, and you never touch the internal hard drive, so you're never messing with people's stuff, but you're able to make use of that and then save your stuff to the other stick.
One and by the way, they have tutorials on how to create that USB stick from Windows, from Mac OS, and from Ubuntu itself.
Okay.
So if you've already got Ubuntu on a laptop, that's your kid right there. Just click on that one, and it'll give you the DD and all. It gives you exactly what you type in to do you need to do. So it's very cool. It's very easy. One thing I might suggest is hunt around and find a USB drive that is lockable if you're going to go boot it on somebody else's machine.
Mm-hmm. Now, lockable, I remember seeing that back when USB drives were still pretty fresh. They'd have a little switch on the side that would allow you to sort of like, let me put on my old man pants for a minute.
Yeah.
Do you remember floppy disks? And they had that little switch on the back that you could switch. I'm speaking about 3.5.
Why, you young whippersnapper, I remember tape.
We had nibble nachos. Well, and we liked it.
SD cards.
We had punch tapes.
Yes, SD cards too.
Had them on the side for the long
side.
They
still do.
People didn't notice it though because they were so small, they blend in so well with the rest of the plastic that it wasn't that noticeable.
Right. They still have them. And if so, if you get a carrier, you can still buy a USB, an SD card carrier.
That's what I do.
And you can lock that if you want to. And that's generally that's not an issue if you're booting cold anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't worry about it.
Right.
But if you're planning on doing something like that on a machine, if you plug it into a machine that's already running and that machine is infected, it will try at least to infect your Linux system, which may not be successful but may screw up the USB stick.
Well, that's one thing we always used in our shop. I mean, my employees all had their own carrier that one end was the USB, and then the other end was where we'd put the SD card.
Okay.
And before we left for the day, we'd put up any new files that we needed, and you relocked it.
Okay.
That way, if we went to a customer's house, we could emphatically say...
Categorically,
emphatically, you didn't get this from us because there's no way in heck you can. This is locked down.
Right.
I don't want any junk that's on your machine getting to mine and then taking it to other people.
It's only going
to
make things worse for everybody, if that happens.
So we that was one practice we had. And
that's a good thought.
Yeah, we did it all the time, and it was the best tool that we had because, you know, this way we could get in there, put on the latest stuff, run it, and not worry about it jumping back or trying to sneak back onto our stuff.
But again, if you are interested in using Linux, this is a great way to do it without having to dual boot or find a second machine or whatever it is you want to do.
Right.
I would suggest a 16 gig machine, a 16 gig thumb drive.
Right. But this lets you dip your toe in the water of Linux and at least see, hey, what does this look like on my screen? How does this work?
You have to be aware it's going to be slow because the connection to that USB drive is slow.
Right.
And much of the stuff that's on it is compressed, so it has to uncompress when it runs.
Does it support USB 3?
It'll support USB 3 if your hardware does.
If your computer that you're using supports 3, and if the stick that you're buying supports 3.
Right, so you have to have a USB stick that supports 3. You have to have hardware that supports 3.
And the problem is,
and it has to be a bootable.
When you go to your local drugstore or your local grocery store and go to get a stick, most of the time they're not 3.
Yeah.
And so you have to specifically look for the ones that are considered high speed.
Yeah.
They tend to be a bit more expensive, but not a lot.
Yeah.
But a 16 gig machine, a 16 gig thumb drive will let you use your current machine
as a test to see if you really want Linux, particularly if you have an older, say, Windows 7 machine.
Right.
You know, as long as you've got it, it'll run in 2 gigs. 4 gigs, of course, is better. It'll run on anything from a Pentium on up, obviously, the faster the better.
But Linux in general is very resource efficient.
Right.
And
yeah.
it will happily take whatever you've got. The more you can give it, the happier it will be, of course.
Well, that's no different than any other operating system. I mean, the more space that you can give it to dance around on, the happier it's going to be. And that's whether it's Linux, Macs, PCs, you know, all platforms are that way.
It's right. Yeah.
Not, you know, something that's unique.
Right.
Right. TLP is a program you can run on Linux. You can install it and run it. Again, it's free. And it's the Linux Advanced Power Manager.
Okay. I remember you were talking about that earlier.
Yeah. And what it does is it takes a look at all the processes running.
Okay.
Determines which ones are just running and don't have to and shuts them down.
Okay.
Until you need them.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, sets, you can tell it, it doesn't do this automatically, you can tell it to set the parameters on certain programs so that they're more efficient.
Ah.
So you can tweak as much or as little as you want.
Okay.
I've already got an extra hour and a half, 2 hours out of my laptop.
Oh, good.
With that. What it's was called that other TLP.
Thing? Okay.
And,
I have a plugin there's also that I added recently, and I'm going to see if I can find it. It had to do with sleeping tabs. So, for instance, if you've got a tab with Gmail open, your computer is constantly checking in with Gmail so that Gmail can show you the new messages that arrive when
right.
they arrive. Other websites, Twitter, or usually social media things, or web, what we used to call Web 2.0 things, where there's an active connection that goes between you and the server. That will stay active and need to send information in and out, need to talk to the application, need to talk to the memory, need to talk to the Wi-Fi chips, and all that takes battery power.
Right.
And this tool would let tabs run for a little while, but if they weren't the frontmost tab, it would freeze them in place so that they couldn't make connections, and that helps your battery last longer. I'm going to see if I can track that down.
Yep. There are a lot of things that you can tweak in Linux. And I'm sure in the Mac OS, because it's Mac kernel underneath.
Yeah.
To give you a little more.
I'll find it. We'll get it on your website.
Yeah. All right. That's it. That's Music Tells Me We're Done for the Week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright. I specifically want to thank Dennis Worcester, who
thank you.
Constantly does yeoman service for us when he gets to come in.
Happy
we love to have
it.
Him here. And I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You that we can continue to be member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours. Be good.